You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, JD, and it is amazing, and I'm so excited to announce that everyone is on the show today. Wow. Chris Triplett is here, Nicole Hale is here, Chris McFeely is here. Wow. We have...
Yeah.
Yes, and it will not be that way next week, but this week, we'll focus on this week.
Oh, boy!
This week, all of us are here.
We'll take what we could get, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we are all here. So it is Fanboy versus the Eisner nominations. As that's probably the biggest thing out, I guess, this week is the Eisner nominations came out. So Chris McFeely, you want to tell us a little bit about who was and maybe who was not nominated?
It's one of those Eisner lists where I don't know who these people are and what these things are.
Some of them, though, we know some of this stuff.
Yes, some.
Basically, it's related to the Oscars.
It's more like the Golden Globes because they cover so much. I mean, there's so many things that go on in comics. You know, there's a lot of mini issues and stuff that nobody pays attention to that's outside of like the big two. And so there's a lot of those things that get the sort of artsy nominations. And then it's like you get down to the bottom to like writer, that kind of stuff. And you're like, oh, okay, yeah, now I know some of this stuff. That was my experience. I don't know.
I have the list in front of me here. So, best short story, I recognize nothing. We did talk about an issue of Tales Designed to Thrizzle at one point, didn't we?
Yep, that was deep.
A story from issue number 8 of that nominated, but I'm afraid I don't recognize.
Which one was it?
It was called Moon 1969, the true story of...
Was that the one? I think I remember werewolf? You telling me about that one. That's the one with Neil and...
Is that Neil's the werewolf?
Yeah.
The reason why it all started was because a woman told a man, I will not do... Until men can land on the moon, you're not... I'm not... it was some kind of sexual gesture. She's like, why should I do that for you if we can't even get man on the moon?
She
was determined to go on to... Yeah, and then basically the astronauts turned into werewolves.
Yeah, I vaguely remember this one.
I read one of them.
Yeah.
It was one of the funniest things I probably have ever read in my life. Every panel, I was cracking up. So, yeah.
See, Nicole knows this stuff.
Well, that issue has also been nominated as one of the best single issues or one
shot. I actually agree with that. They had so many fun things in that
that's
one.
Good. So. Best continuing series is where probably we're all most familiar with. I know all of these things, essentially, but we've never talked about Fatale by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips or Prophet by Brandon Graham and Simon Roy on this show before, but I know they get good press. And then the other nominations for Best Continuing Series are Hawkeye, Manhattan Project, and Saga.
I think
you guys... Saga will probably walk away with that.
Good feeling about Saga in this category.
I don't know. Manhattan Projects is pretty good.
Manhattan Projects is like good, but I don't see it. I mean, Saga is doing something. Manhattan Projects is, again, it's kind of that high concept, but it's just a little quirky. Saga is doing something really, really different. Like, it's really kind of, it's taking that Star Wars idea of, like, taking very basic elements and then making them fantastic and making them science fiction-y. And it's kind of doing that, but in a different way and for a different medium. So, I don't know. I think of those categories, yeah, I would have to agree that I think Saga's going to run away with
it. I disagree. I think it should be Hawkeye because if they can make a comic successful for Hawkeye...
Well, I think it's big... Well, I mean, let's put it this way. I think it's big that a... Big Two series about Hawkeye, yeah. I mean, but a Big Two series even is making this in some ways, in a sense, like,
Big Two series normally makes in...
Well, but in the sense that up against the things that it's up against.
Yeah.
I mean, we're seeing this trend where, like, the really big creativity, the really interesting stuff is being done out of Image and
well, you can stop there because look at the five books.
Yeah, I mean they're all Image, so
Marvel.
Really,
yeah.
So I think that's the interesting thing to me, that we've got a new series that's really interesting, really exciting, doing some different things, and is happening at Marvel, of all places, and out of their primary universe. I mean, it's not like this is a Marvel side project. You know, this is Hawkeye.
So.
I'm not sure why they've separated. Normally, I thought the distinction between best continuing series was that it was a series that was already ongoing, and best new series distinguished that from that by being something new that started within the last year. But Fatal, Saga, and Hawkeye all get entered for best new series as well.
I think we had this problem with our...
Fatal's been around for a while, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, I don't know.
I think we had this same problem with our own sort of annual awards, where it's like, you know, do you want to exclude it from a continuing series because it's new, or... Yeah, I don't know. It depends on what they're saying, you know, how they want to set up their criteria.
I feel they should separate new from continuing.
Yeah, if it's in new, it can't be in both, you know.
Yeah, by definition. But Saga is, and it'll probably win it too.
Yeah, I mean, it would seem like if it would win one, it would win the other. But
I mean, if it wins best continuing series, how can it not win best new series? And if it wins best new series, that definitely means that at least Fatal and Hawkeye can't beat it in best continuing series.
Yeah,
other nominations are Adventure Time from Boom Studios and Bandette by Paul Tobin and Colleen Coover, which I've been meaning to check out, but it's digital only, and you know me.
Yeah, I think I've heard of that, but I haven't. But Adventure Time would be that's kind of an interesting one out of that set.
Well, like, we're talking about Cartoon Network Adventure Time, right?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. That's kind of an interesting nomination.
And yet, it's listed under Best New Series, and it also gets nominated for Best Publication. Well, I suppose this is a separate thing. Best Publication for Kids.
Yeah.
Along with Road to Oz from Marvel and a selection of other books that I'm unfortunately not familiar with. Though I'm not sure why Adventure Time is nominated for Best Publication for Kids, ages 8 to 12, and Adventure Time, Marceline and the Scream Queens miniseries gets nominated for Best Publication for Teens, because I'm not sure what the two books have done differently.
Maybe one's written for an older audience? I don't know.
He doubt it. It's studios and it's Adventure Time, but I don't know. And Adventure Time also gets the nod for Best Humor Publication as well. So, I mean, it really is everywhere outside of the main categories this year.
Wow.
You can think of something like that. Put a TV show, put on some merchandise, get a comic.
Make some money.
Yeah.
Totally.
Step 3, ? Step 4, profit.
I still think we need to use one of our ideas.
Yeah. If we only own the rights to the things that we have ideas.
Hey. I mean, Robin Hood's in the public domain, you guys. Let's get Sherwood out there.
Yeah, we could do that. We could totally do Sherwood. That's free. That's fine.
I say we do it, man.
So let's maybe skip down to writer, artist.
Jumping there if I could find it. And so best writer, well, a lot of it's the replicated credits from the best series, obviously, because that's Brubaker for Fatal, Fraction for Hawkeye, Hickman for Manhattan Project, Vaughn for Saga, as well as Frank M. Young for The Carter Family. I'm afraid I haven't read that. And Brandon Graham for Multiple Warheads and Prophet. Oh, no, sorry. Yeah, so hang on. Let me just scroll back up there. Wait. Brubaker, Fraction, Hickman, Graham, Vaughn. Yeah, so the five guys from the best ongoing series get the nominated for best writer. Naturally, makes sense, but it kind of diminishes the category a bit, I guess, but it's hard to separate them. And Frank M. Young for the Carter Family.
Okay.
Not sure who's going to go away with that one, because, you know, obviously we all love Saga, but 70 to 80% of what makes Saga as awesome as it is the art.
Yes.
And yet, I don't know which of these categories she would have gone under, but Fiona Staples has not got nominated for anything.
Snubbed completely.
That's crazy.
I mean, that is just, of all of the things on there, it was that is just a punch in the gut, really.
It is It is notable by... I mean, I assume she would probably have gone under best painter slash multimedia artist.
Mm-hmm.
Because she does everything.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? Exactly. And what are the nominations there? I mean, which is the one that we would boot off? That's
Five Guys we've never heard of.
Yeah. So...
So did they not include her? Because, you know, she's got to be... Obviously got to be a robot since she does all that work and robots can't win awards.
Right.
Is that what it is?
That's got to be... I mean, seriously, it's... I mean, I don't... I was so confused when I read this list. Like, I just did not know how that could happen. I mean, I still don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right. Asia? How would...
I think.
Aha? I mean, love his
how
art.
How spell it?
A-J-A.
Aja. You know how I know that? Because it was a character in Jim.
Okay. So...
like but the outrage?
How can you argue with that logic? But I think that... I mean, I love his art. Absolutely love it. Mind-blowing. What he's doing on Haunted.
Yep, definitely. Yeah.
And Staples should have been right next to it. It's just like...
Yeah.
You know... Blows me away.
I mean, these other people are top quality, too. Becky Cloonan, Colleen Coover, yeah. Sean Phillips, I don't know Joseph Remnant, and Chris Samnee from Daredevil.
But they're not working on some of the best books, so it's like, how...
Samnee!
You know what? I mean, that just doesn't... Duh.
Yeah.
Like, it's not
because
compute.
The Arctic saga is such a huge part of it.
It's an integral.
Everything that you see on that page is the... product of one woman's creativity. Like.
And I think that's the thing about both Saga and Hawkeye, setting it apart in some ways from some of the other books, in that, you know, the look and feel of Hawkeye is as much tied to what's happening in the riot. I mean, they're indispensable. You can't have one without the other. Whereas I think I dare say, and I may be wrong, but I mean, I think in some of these books, especially the ones where you see the replication of the best book to the best writer, so there's a lot of things that's going on from the writer side, and that's not to say that the artists aren't doing a lot of hard work. They are, and so I have to be very careful with what I'm saying. But I think if there's any two books where the writer and the artist were indispensable from each other, where the work is about both of them, it's got to be Saga and Hawkeye. And to see...
I would say it's probably less Hawkeye, to be honest. I could see... I mean, it's like... If, for any reason, Aja ever has to leave Hawkeye, obviously that'll be an artistic blow to the book. And more to the point, whoever comes on next will probably be actively working within the preset style that...
Well, that's already happened, though. And it already happened to the detriment of the book. I mean,
I think that's comparable to when Javier Pulido and Marcos Martin left Daredevil. Chris Samnee is not copying them or anything, but he's very much in that sort of stylistic wheelhouse, and he's using the visual shorthands and things that they came up with, like the depiction of the radar sense, in his work. You know, anybody who comes on to Hawkeye afterwards will have to do just what Aja is doing. But I could not see Saga at all without Staples. Like, if she left, he'd stop.
No.
Like, you know, I think that's the decision.
They need to end the book when she leaves, probably.
Yeah, basically.
And yet here we are talking about it because she didn't get a nomination, so...
Yeah, pretty ridiculous. Don't know why.
Yeah. Anyway, not to harp on it. And I know some people were talking about Greg Capullo not getting a nomination on Batman as well. Which
Greg Capullo is really good.
Which I can see. Yeah. I can see. It's just like that book got totally passed up. All of Batman got pretty much passed up on the Eisner. But, I mean, there again, I think it's...
Let's be honest here. Like, there is a... shocking, not depressing, not down, not disheartening, but actively shocking lack of anything DC.
Two books, isn't it? Two books, and one of them isn't even... I think they had two nominations, was my understanding.
Hang on, let me just hit the old control F. Let's see. Yuko Shimizu has been nominated as Best Cover Artist for The Unwritten. G.H. Williams has been nominated as Best Cover Artist for Batwoman. Dave Stewart.
Okay, has I kind of agree with that one. Batwoman's covers are always amazing.
I don't know. I'm really over Batwoman at this stage.
Yeah.
Oh, I still love the artwork. I like the one from last month.
So, but next year, what? J.H. Williams is doing Sandman, so I guess we're going to be seeing a nomination on that one.
Been interesting. I'll be looking forward to that. I'm actively looking forward to that. Dave Stewart has also been nominated as Best Colorist for Batwoman, but also for Fatale on Image, so that's his name there. And that is, that is actually it.
Wow.
Three nominations, and they're all for covers and coloring.
Now, Marvel got five, but four of those are for Hawkeye, are they not?
It's just a little clickety-click. Best continuing series for Hawkeye, best new series for Hawkeye, Road to Oz for best publication for kids, Road to Oz for best adaptation for another medium, Fraction for best writer, Aja for Hawkeye as well, Samnee for Daredevil, Aja for Hawkeye's cover.
Seven or eight. But there's a lot
for Hawkeye. There's a lot of scenes there, but it's like...
Yeah.
It's getting nominations for, not to put down covers, but things that matter.
Yeah. I mean, covers aren't...
Obviously, covers matter tremendously when it comes to comics, but they don't matter as much as they used to because people don't go into comic stores.
Yeah, a lot of people...
And people don't care about variants anymore. They don't give a shit about variants.
Still care
don't
about
put everyone in the same category.
I don't.
Are not everywhere. Contrary to your own opinion.
Like, when you get a cover, and I love it when you get a cover, and then what's on the cover doesn't actually happen in the comic. Oh, that's just great. That's why covers don't matter.
I think just like any award, just like any award set, you know, people are going to get left out. You know, things are going to get put in that you go, eh? But, you know, I think it's probably a decent cross-section of things that we would pick. I mean, there's a lot of things on this list that we would pick. I mean, that aren't on
definitely.
Our annual list. So,
okay. Yeah.
We have a question in the forum. Any nominations for J.H. Williams?
Just for the cover.
Hey, did IDW get any nominations?
Yeah, they did. They got several.
One for Woodwork, the collected works of Wally Wood. That's an art book, so it's not really one of their works. David Mazzucchelli's Daredevil Born Again Artist's Edition. Again, that was for Best Publication Design, so I guess that was IDW's work. Richard Stark's Parker. That's an adaptation by Darwin Cook, so, well, yeah. Alex Raymond's Flash Gordon and Jungle Jim for Best Archival Collection.
They are really good at collecting other people's work.
I read Flash Gordon and I laughed for most of it. It was supposed to be serious, but like...
I know. IDW do a lot of stuff with those other properties, and they do. I mean, like, the artist's editions are fantastic things, no question about it. Chris Samnee is also the penciler for Rocketeer Cargo of Doom at IDW, but he's been nominated for that and for Daredevil. So. And the best lettering... for Troy Little on Angora Napkin 2, Harvest of Revenge, from IDW.
That's a great title.
It is rather, isn't it? I was just thinking,
a pretty title.
What is that, and where do I read about it?
That sounds like something I would read. I've seen it.
Never heard of it before. Yeah, that's about it for IDW, though. Nothing for their dedicated work, but, comics... critics can be snobby as well, and you're not going to see a lot of licensed work make it into the Eisners.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah. No matter how good it be.
Yeah.
So. Okay, cool. What else do we have then, news-wise?
But apart from the Eisners, really, nobody said anything stupid this week, and nobody announced anything either. So really, the news we've got is the Man of Steel trailer came out. The newest Man of Steel trailer came out.
Yep. Still haven't seen it.
Yeah.
It's a trailer for a Superman movie.
It was pretty great. Yeah, I mean, really liked it.
He's doing Superman stuff. It's not Superman being Batman. Oh, he's going to go off. He's going to learn to be Batman. Even though he's not going to be Batman, he's going to be Superman. But yeah, he's all depressed and everything. No, he's doing Superman things.
That was a big step because the previous trailer just really made it look all maudlin, whereas this one did present that it wasn't maudlin. It was actually there was some very legitimate emotional punch to it, and it was him actually going around the world, not trying to find himself or hide from. The first trailer made it really seem like he was trying to hide from the world, Yeah. Whereas this one is, it's actually him going out there and doing everything he possibly can to help people. And I really like that. And then the moment in the trailer with Pa Kent as well. Everybody was kind of up in arms after the first trailer with Pa Kent, where he was like, you know, Clark asks him, should I have let them die? And Kent goes,
maybe.
Maybe. And you know, it's like, that's an interesting anyway. But then this trailer has the moment where, you know, he shows him the spaceship, and Clark asks him, can't we just keep pretending that I'm your son? And Kevin Costner just takes him and goes, you are my son. And I was like, bit my fist.
Heart.
Tear. Like, oh, ah, pain in the, oh, God. It really just, it took me off guard. You know, it was sort of an emotional right cross. I was like, whoa, it's 9 o'clock in the morning. I wasn't expecting that. Yeah. I'm not awake.
It's a good trailer. Like, I was telling JD, like, I love the part where, like, you know, she's asking, you know, what is the S for? And he says, it's not an S.
Mark,
you know,
Wade.
It's the symbol for hope. And I was like, oh, yeah.
Mark Wade on Twitter, like, about, because you could tell, like, exactly as he's watching the trailer, because he about shit himself when that came across, because apparently he didn't know they were using that. And my understanding afterwards is that that is from Birthright. So he was, like, thrilled.
Well, I was thinking that, like, a while back, before we even saw trailers, we were hearing that they were actually pulling a lot from Birthright. Am I misremembering this, or...
Doesn't ring a bell.
I seem to remember something coming across that they were, like, using Birthright as sort of like a Bible or something when they were writing the script, or something. I don't know.
So to be the voice of negativity... I don't know. It's like, for me, as a non-Superman fan, every subsequent trailer has, like, made me less excited about the movie. Because it's like, oh, it is a Superman movie, and then there's things like Zod. Which is like, damn. I don't care about Zod. And,
I'm kind of coming around on Zod at this. I mean, you guys know I was actually one of the most active proponents of Zod, because it's the villain who's only famous for being in the Donner films. And given that we're at a stage now where it is apparent that these films are trying to get as far away from Donner as possible, and that is the right thing to do.
Yeah.
It does seem a bit like a bit of a backstep to do Zod, but as I've said, I've come to the conclusion / hope that the only reason that Zod is happening is so that there can be some explosive ass punching by the time this film
and
is over.
And it does look like there is some punching in the trailer, so...
There is some action. There's Superman doing Superman-y things, and I like that.
No Luthor, though.
I think we'll see Luthor in the film.
I think he'll be at the end of it. Like, I was telling JD,
the way you do it is,
like, Superman, like, saves the world, he stops Zod, and then the last scene is Lex Luthor up in his ivory tower saying, that guy's a dick, I need to put him in his place.
That's
the last scene of the movie.
And that's what I'm thinking. Superman is
good,
a dick.
Too. I'm done with that.
But that's not... Yeah. He's not... There's no one listed as playing Luthor on IMDb, not saying that that's the Bible.
I think they're trying to sit on it. For whatever reason, I think they're trying... It's Nick Fury. I think they're trying to sit on it. I think it could even be a post-credits sequence.
And that's what I was like. I mean, I'm okay with that as long as it comes along. It's not Luthor not being in it is not a huge deal. I have this weird thing, mental thing, where I have problems with Jor-El having facial hair. It trips me out. I'm like, I have this vision of Krypton as like this clean, crisp, utopian sort of world with, like, smooth lines and everything.
So in your utopia, nobody is allowed to have beards, is this it?
This is the... Yes.
Beardist, JD.
Yes.
So Big Feely can't be in utopia right now.
Yes, I'm such a beardist, you know.
I was telling him, Jor-El is, like, one of the smartest men on Krypton. How can you show that he's smart if he doesn't have a beard to stroke it? He needs
right,
to stroke
that's
the
beard.
Beard.
The beard is...
that's why it's there.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it's like, there's a mental block there, you know, for me. So, especially when you see, you know, Clark later and he's like so smooth faced and, you know.
Superman's smooth faced.
Yeah. So,
unless it's the end of the world.
Can I ask this question again? How does Superman shave?
I was going to say that. I hope we get a scene.
Beams reflected off a mirror onto his face.
Yeah, he shoots his eye beams off of the glass, and he burns the hair off of his face. Okay. I hope we get that scene.
Yeah, hopefully we get that, because that is like...
He gets laser surgery.
I forget that it was a thing that was done. But yes, like that's got to be the only way. Wow.
I would think that if you give Superman a beard, you probably do have to, in a film, address the concept of how he shaves. Yeah.
Yeah, because you can't...
The scene where he takes a razor and the razor...
That might even happen. You know, if we're doing a growing up scene, that might happen.
That would be great. I would be for that, actually.
Yeah.
Hardcore. So, I mean...
The trailers are being deliberately, I would think, very reserved about showing the extent of his powers. And I'm thinking that that is because there is going to be some arse-rattling stuff in this film.
Mm.
And they're just really, really holding back on it. I'm hoping that they're holding back on it. I think I get the feeling they're being smart and they're holding back. I mean, as I've said before, like the scene where he takes off is really the only thing we've seen in the trailers to even convey the sense of Superman's power, and it really conveys it. I think it's really the first time in cinema where the true scope of Superman's powers is going to be apparent. The way the Earth quakes below him just from the force of him lifting off of it. And I think they're really holding back. I mean, I think there could be some planet-splitting punches thrown in this thing.
Oh, God, please.
Okay. I'm probably going to go see it, though. I mean, I'm not, you know. All of this complaining trailer, on my side.
That trailer did an awful lot to encourage me even more than I already was.
It turned me around because the first couple of trailers, I was like, I don't know about this. It seems too dark. I mean, Superman really shouldn't be Batman, you know? And it seems like that's what they were doing with the first trailers, but the new trailers got me, you know, hopeful for it now.
It's still very gloomy looking, and I really wish I didn't feel they had to do that. If there's one superheroic character in all of fiction who is allowed to be bright primary colors, it really is Superman. Yeah, and I really wish they didn't feel they had to gloom down the palette of the thing.
Well, and that's especially like I'm talking about like Krypton. Like Krypton, like that scene of Krypton even exploding is like, I mean, it should look like the Emerald City exploding, you know? I mean,
that's the depiction of Krypton. Yeah, I mean, okay, that's the vision of Krypton in your mind, but Krypton is varied in its depictions. Sure. When I think of Krypton, I think of a very sterile place. John Byrne's Krypton was a very sterile, emotionless planet.
Mm.
You know, and I'm okay with the idea of a barren, gloomy Krypton.
Oh, fine. But anyway, I'll take this as a compliment, which is that even though it's like, obviously, I'm not fired up about it, I can see where this trailer would excite people who are excited about Superman. So it's not, I'm not stupid, I'm not blind, I'm not evil.
You're just wrong.
It's just like, it's just, you know, as a non-Superman guy, it's kind of like, okay.
They seem like they have their heart very much in the right place, though. Even if the colors are drab, it seems like the brightness of Superman himself is going to shine through. I mean, like that scene about it meaning hope and everything, and the narration about how Superman will be something that people will aspire to. And that's what's true of Superman in a meta sense as well, in an in-fiction and an out-of-fiction sense, is that Superman is an ideal both for the people in his world to live up to and the real world as well. And I like that they're playing that angle. I like it.
And I hope that angle stays stronger because I prefer... It's probably why I like Morrison's Superman so much, because Morrison isn't trying to make Superman into a Christ figure as much as he's trying to make him into like a mythological figure. And so if that's the direction, great, but it's like some of there's just a few warning signs that it's going in the Jesus direction. Well, and you know,
to be fair, that the Christ metaphor is kind of built into Superman, though. Unavoidable parallels, you know. Father sends only son to Earth to raise up the people there, and then he dies and comes back, but that'll probably not be in this film. You know, depends how far you want to go. Like, Return of Superman? It just went full Christ. But, Return of Superman? Sorry, Superman Returns. Just went full-blown Jesus.
Yeah.
But, this, I think, will... I feel like this one is shooting more for a non-Christ metaphor. Just, it's shooting for a Superman metaphor.
You can't avoid the whole idea that, you know, he's really like a god to us. I mean, that's something you really can't avoid. But I think they're not gonna hit it on the head like they did in Superman Returns.
Yeah,
they're not gonna
like,
do it as much.
He's Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ. Superstar.
Superman.
Superman. Flying through the air, he'll all save us all. God.
Get to work on that right now.
Yeah. The Superman, whoever's writing the Superman musical, get that song.
Right now.
Put it in there.
I would so see the Superman musical if they had as many accidents as Spider-Man.
Wow. Well, they've been doing... Flying is not as hard as, like, going from the air to landing and then, like, walking. Like, Peter Pan has been on forever, so they could do Superman. That's not too different. Yeah. Anyway, any other news then? Was that it?
I guess the only other news is the Iron Man 3's out this Thursday here in the UK, bitches.
Oh, damn. Damn. I have to wait another week.
But what you don't know is the real movie they're saving for us.
Right, I mean, actually.
You're going to get Iron Man?
You're actually getting Iron Man 2.
You're getting Iron Man 2 with a new ending.
Right, they're just
that's what I heard.
They're just re-showing Iron Man 2. We will actually get Iron Man 3.
We will get the real Iron Man 3, but you're getting Iron Man 2 with a new ending. The new title. They'll say Iron Man 3 this time.
Sounds like some bitching to me, yeah.
Wishing on our part, basically. Okay. Very good.
So you can go ahead and have your pre-show, you know, they'll find all the flaws, and then they'll redo it, you know, make up the little
right.
bits that are screwed up, and they'll give
Fix
them to us.
We'll get the
pristine version.
No spoilers next week.
Nope.
No spoilers. But I will talk.
I'm not worried about you, McFeely. McFeely's really good about not spoiling stuff. It's about 80% of the rest of your country.
It's the rest of Twitter, and yeah.
They're going to, like, show you guys the movie, and they're going to be like, wow, these guys didn't like Fing Fang Foom. Let's delete him out of the movie so the Americans don't see
it. I'll be perfectly freaking happy because I'll be like, I saw Fing Fang Foom, and none of y'all did.
God.
Oh, please let it happen. I know it won't.
No, there will be no Fing Fang Foom. Even if there is, he won't have pants. So
I was going to say, is it pants or pamphlets?
I'm okay with that.
It'll just be Fing Fang Foom with no pants, and that'll just be pointless.
Barely be Fing Fang Foom at all.
Yeah. So, okay, very good. Well, then I guess we will move on.
It's Fing Fang Foom.
To who? No?
What?
What?
Fing Fang Foom? What?
Who?
What?
All right, then Chris Triplett, then I guess we'll start us off then for our comics of the week that we will discuss.
Yeah.
Speaking of Fing Fang Foom, I'm reviewing Daredevil number 25.
Are those two things related, or are you just yanking my chain, man?
Oh, finally.
I wish I could tell you that Fing Fang Foom was in Daredevil number 25. Make me the happiest person
Mark
on earth.
Wade loses his shit. Fing Fang Foom in the next issue.
I tell you, though, if you were to make me a short list of Marvel books most likely to feature Fing Fang Foom this year, I think Daredevil would probably creep on there.
They could probably do it, right?
Hey, if Mole Man can show up and if Daredevil can go to Latveria, then hell, anything can happen at this point.
Yeah.
It's
for Fing Fang Foom.
I mean, it's another reason why we love this book so much. And you know, what's so great about this issue is the last couple of issues have been building to this. I mean, this is the big issue where this bad guy organization has been experimenting on people to kind of give them Daredevil powers with various problems or successes, however you look at it. This is the issue where you find the guy where it worked. There's another guy that's basically got Daredevil's powers. Daredevil tracks him down. Well, he sort of, you know, kind of tracks down the organization, but, you know, runs into this guy, and they are going to have a big old fight. And it's pretty freaking awesome. I don't want to, like, spoil, like, the ending of it. I especially don't want to spoil the sort of realization that he has while fighting him, because it's game changer.
Oh,
it's,
God, yeah.
Spider-Man. I mean,
that was a spectacular little twist revelation on the end of that.
I mean,
you're
going
through the whole issue thinking things are one way, and then just at the very end, it's like, just smacks you out of nowhere, and you go, oh, snap, when it turns out. Like, we're not telling you what it is. No way. Yeah. It was that awesome.
And shocker, the guy that he's fighting is a ninja. Shocker. Yeah, I know.
Daredevil.
I think that's the first ninja we've had in Mark Waid's Daredevil, though. A ninja.
Wow. I mean, that's. Yeah, I mean.
Though it's the 2-year anniversary, it's like 2 years. Okay, now the ninjas. Yeah.
Now we can do the ninjas.
God.
But yeah, it's so good. I mean, guys, you should be reading this book because we're like, you're missing out on the best. It might be the best book that Marvel's putting out. I don't know. I love Spider-Man. Spider-Man was good this week, too, but, man, this one, like, topped it. I'm sorry. It just topped it.
This is a book I am doing in trade, so, I mean, I am up to date as far as picking up the trades. I'll probably take some of them with me when I'm in out of town next week so that I can have something to read. But
totally read them, yeah, and keep going. If you like the trades, dude, start picking up the individual issues because they're so good. I mean, it's...
I think that defeats the point of reading in a trade, but okay, yes.
I'm saying, I feel like you'll get caught up on trades, and then like there'll be like, I don't know, like 5 or 10 issues that haven't made it to trade yet, and you'll be like, damn, what's going to happen next? And you'll be like, I'm just going to start.
And
picking
I'm
going
to wait on the next.
I need to drop something to pick this back up.
But yeah, it's so good. Yeah.
I say about Daredevil what I always said about Journey into Mystery under Gillen, which was that it's amazingly consistent.
Yeah.
You know, some months you do get, some weeks, some months you get a book that's better than it. Some weeks, some months, that same book could be worse than an issue of Daredevil. Daredevil is just so rock solid quality.
I can't think of an issue of Daredevil that I've not liked so far. I mean, I can't. I've went back and tried to think, like, was there an issue where just like nothing happened and it just wasn't entertaining? But no, I mean, he doesn't waste a page. And never. We talked about Samnee getting an art credit. For the Eisners, and you can tell why, because he's like knocking it out of the ballpark. It's still just as beautiful as previous artists that we've had on the book. It's really good.
I still love. I mean, I don't know how Daredevil's radar sense has been depicted historically, because I've not read an awful lot of Daredevil. But that pink rippling line effect that Polito and Martin did. When they started the book, like, that's still around, and that's one of those visual hallmark sort of things that people will have to keep doing probably until Mark Waid leaves, to be honest. You know, because
I kind of hope if they ever reboot the Daredevil movie series that they do that, just to see that like in a film, and see how they could maybe do that in a film, because that would be a really cool thing to kind of take away. Because I figure if they ever do a Daredevil movie again, that they're going to pull a lot from Mark Waid, because this stuff's going to be really good. Yeah.
I mean, I don't hate the first Daredevil film. It's got a lot of problems, but I don't hate on it. And it's one of those ones that's it's made by a guy who clearly loved Daredevil and maybe a little too much. But he pulled a lot of stuff from it. Owed tons to Frank Miller's Daredevil.
Yeah.
But the Marvel Cinematic Universe is a lighter, brighter place. And I could really see Mark Waid's Daredevil...
Oh yeah,
and you know, I mean, but let's not. Mark Waid's Daredevil is basically Stan Lee and Jack Kirby and Wally Wood's Daredevil. It's Wally Wood. That's not right. That Silver Age Daredevil, swashbuckly Daredevil, and I would like to see that. I'd pay to see that.
Yeah.
Do you have any theories about Daredevil. The big baddie is? I mean, there's not really touched upon in this issue, but last issue we did see the big bad. But he was, you know, all sealed up, so we didn't see who he was. But do you have any theories?
I can't remember. I'm trying to think, like, what we saw. So was it like a silhouette?
Just
saw
his eyes, remember? He's inside that thing.
Oh. So I've been kind of thinking, and I was, like, thinking, okay, who hates him so much that he would do these things? And, like, my mind always goes back to, I mean, Kingpin. But can it be Kingpin? I mean, is it possible... that they would even go in that direction?
My mind keeps going to Bullseye.
Bullseye, you think?
I don't want it to be Bullseye.
No, I don't want it to be Bullseye either. Yeah.
Do you remember the scene? He's inside that capsule thing. That's
I remember now that I think about it. Yeah. Uh-huh.
You see how there are photos and things being put up on the wall in front of him for him to study. And obviously you don't see all the structure of the photos. You see just a corner of where the photos have been pasted up. And I looked at the corner and I think, is that the corner of a bullseye? I think it might be bullseye, but I don't want it to be bullseye. So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't want it to be bullseye either. It even crossed my mind that maybe this ninja guy might have turned out to be bullseye. Like before we saw
yeah,
it.
I thought it was going to be, yeah.
Like when we saw the cover, I was kind of thinking, okay, like if they're going to give somebody radar powers, Jesus Christ, it would be painful if they gave it to Bullseye. I mean, he would be unstoppable, wouldn't he? But, yeah, Daredevil's excellent. Just quick little nod to Wonder Woman. It continues to be awesome, too. This is that great issue where it's, you know, Wonder Woman, you know, hitting Orion on the cover and then on the flip cover, you know, kissing him. Just a quick little thing on it. Basically, that does happen in the issue because he's kind of been hitting on Wonder Woman the whole point of the story. And she like goes over and she like kisses him, and you think, oh, you know, what's going to come out of this? And you know, it doesn't go in the direction that you think it's going to go.
I saw that page. Yeah.
Yeah, like if you want to, you know, just think about like, you know, women, you know, taking about women's rights, just read this panel where she kisses him and then he screams and then she says, I can live without your disrespect, can you live without these? And he says, I don't want to. And then she says, then respect me or I'll rip them off, we clear? And he's like, yeah.
Wow.
And that's basically the, you know, the big takeaway from the issue. I mean, the whole story with the gods is still awesome. The motley crew of characters that Wonder Woman has with her, she has. It's basically like I don't know how to compare it, but like Dragon Ball Z. Whenever you would defeat an enemy, and then they become your best friend. You know, that's the best way that I can compare it to, because you've got Hera is now working with her. You've got Ares is now working with her. These people that would clearly be her enemy in this storyline are now basically in her motley crew of best friends. It's such a good book. I can't recommend it enough. It's one of the best DC books I'm getting.
Sweet.
That's it.
Nicole.
All right, I'm going to talk about a new number one. I know.
Yeah.
It's my thing. This is a new one put out by Red 5 Comics. They're the ones that put out Atomic Robo. So, all you Atomic Robo fans out there, this is a new one to look at. It's called Body Troll. I thought it was called Body Troll because that's how it's spelled, but I think his name's Bodhi. That's how you're supposed to say it.
It looks so, like Bodhi because I clicked on the link you sent, and that's what it looks like.
What did you say?
It looks like Bodhi because I clicked on the link you sent.
Yeah.
It looks like Bodhi.
Well, this guy, if you think of trolls, you think of these massive creatures that just go and eat everything possible. They strike fear. And if you're never walking over a bridge, well, this guy, he's the exact opposite. He's like this cuddly little furry thing that everyone just thinks is so darn cute. And he's kind of like a little town mascot. But he wants to strike fear in people, but he can't with those eyes. He kind of looks like if Stitch from Disney and a monkey got together. You know?
I like the art a lot. When I saw the art, I instantly thought Jessamis Bone. I mean, it makes me think so much like Bone.
The art kind of reminds me of Looking for Group online. Looking for Group, if you guys are familiar with that.
Yeah. It reminded me of the little webcomic about, I forget the name of the webcomic, but it's the webcomic about the little monster by the artist or writer of the My Little Pony comic.
Oh, okay.
Forget what it's called. I mean, it's not so much a similarity in art, I think, as a similarity of concept where it's like little monster that's really not monstrous at all.
Yeah, but the artist and the writer are putting this together. This is all just one person.
Is it two guys or is it all one?
It's one guy. His name's Jay Fosgate. He has his little biography in the back telling about what he's done in the past. I can't go through it right now. There's a lot of things. But he was one of his favorite things growing up was the Muppets. So he wanted to get that kind of a Muppet feel where it's just fun, it's innocent, but everyone could enjoy it from ages 2 to 100. And that's what this comic does. You see this cute little furry guy. He's just trying to do what trolls do, but he's not succeeding because he's too dang cute. he works for food for this diner that's run by a fairy godmother. And he's not the best person to work for. He's screwing up constantly. He's supposed to get eggs, but he takes so long they start to hatch. You know? And let's see. And then he gets distracted by the news reporter, who is actually a puppet. So you have this little hand puppet that gives out the news that's going around the town. And it's just like these little quirky things. The place that he works at is actually called the Drunken Pumpkin. Pumpkin. I say that word wrong all the time. Sorry. But it's just filled with just cute little things and so much fun. Like I said, it's just a fun, innocent adventure. And if you like, it's kind of almost has that Tiny Titans feel, you know? It's
See,
just
that's a good
fun.
Comparison to be making, right?
There are so many funny lines, because there's a monster in here, and there's this whole, he gets swallowed by it, but he defeats it by, well, the fairy godmother helps. Let's just say everyone thinks it's because he peed in his mouth. Because he's got scared. He got scared. It's just one of those little. It's just one of those little things. The fairy godmother helps him, but he thinks he did it because he was scared and he peed in his mouth. He peed in his mouth. It's just one of those little. It says right here, you kind of smell like pee. Have you ever been swallowed by a monster? Let's see you not tinkle a little.
Wow.
It's one of those things, and there's just these funny little one-liners. Like I said, the news reporter, the hand puppet, and then he does like a little sideshow with commercials about Kelly's possum nostrils. That's what keeps some bad. It keeps hags away. So if you want to keep the hags away, you've got to try Kelly's dried possum nostrils. So it has like this little a little commercial in here too. And it's really cute. Like I said, really cute, innocent, fun. It's good for all ages. So,
sweet.
And look at that face. How could you not like that face?
Who publishes the book? I mean, is it
It's Red 5 Comics. They're the ones that do Atomic Robo.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's got all these other artist friends that have worked on Red 5 Comics that does some sketches in the back. So there's some little extras in here. He also has, like I said, he talks about his previous work, so you know where you can find Matt. So he has a lot of thank yous here. But again, if you're a fan of the Muppets, this is very Muppet filling. So because that's what he wanted to base it off.
Sounds like fun.
Muppets and Tiny Titans. I mean, it's like this is great. This is Chris McFeely.
It's so much fun. Yeah. It's just like, look how cute this is. Oh my gosh, look at that. That's so there's a lot of fun characters in here. I can't wait to see where this goes. So
sweet. Awesome. All right. Well, let's take a quick break and we will be right back.
Dad, why would Spider-Man be on a bus?
Because he couldn't get a cab?
No way, there's the Hulk.
Hey, where are you guys going?
They're going to McDonald's, where you can find 8 of the greatest superheroes. Because with every hamburger Happy Meal you buy for $1.99, your kids get a superhero action toy. Like the Invisible Woman or the web-whipping Spider-Man. One with each Marvel superhero's Happy Meal you buy.
Look, the Invisible Woman.
And it has your break today.
Huh, I didn't see her on the bus.
All right, we are back, and it's my turn. So I'm going to talk about two things, hopefully quickly. First is going to be a new number one-ish.
Yeah.
Sort
all right.
Of. It is...
Oh, boy, I'm so excited. I love new number ones. What is it, JD?
It's He-Man and the Masters of the Universe.
Oh.
What?
Which...
Say what?
The number one on this should be in quotation marks.
You should say number seven.
Because, okay, so this is, I guess, the first official issue. But it obviously leads on from something else, because the first thing that happens is, like, the funeral for the sorceress, and there's like all the.
Oh yeah, she did die. I forgot about that.
There's some discussion about Teela's hair, which makes no sense if I didn't know it was different than what it is here. So I don't know. There's a lot of in jokes and things where I'm like, this is supposed to be a first issue, and I have no idea what's going on. But basically, it's the like whole.
Just before you start, can I ask why?
Why did I pick it up? Is that what you're asking?
Was it pity? Yeah. What we want to know is, was it pity? Is that what it was?
It was pity. It was a little bit of pity. It's one of those steals. It was the last issue on the shelf at my shop, and it's the cover that we had joked about, and I really, the only reason I bought it is I wanted to see if her name was Herdak or not. And
the girl Herdak, I mean, was that a reality? Is that a real thing?
That was the thing. No, that's the cover of this issue.
Yeah, it's the cover of the issue. It's a thing in this book, so...
he's doing the Loki thing. You know, Loki wanted to be a girl at one point, you know?
No.
I wish that I would have bought this so I could see
her. No. Her name is Despera.
That's nowhere near as good.
So, yeah. And
that's like a desperate attempt.
And it doesn't look like Herdak is... Say, I don't know who that guy is, I guess. I guess it's supposed to be Herdak.
Yeah, I did leaf through this quickly, and I was like, is that supposed to be Herdak?
It looks like the
Frank.
It looks like some organic version of the Fallen, which is, or worse than that, like, who is the big baddie that never really got any screen time in the G2 comic?
Liege Maxima,
yes. It's like sort of some sort of weird organic version of Liege Maxima. So anyway, most of this is, like, half of this is the funeral, and then there's, like, the march of whoever this guy's army is being led by Despera into Eternia. And then Teela gets naked in a hallway for some reason.
Damn straight she does.
Yeah.
You gotta sell the comics somehow.
And it's almost like there's a drawn-in hand of Man-at-Arms, at least, to, like, cover her nearly bare ass. In, like, one panel where it's like, I'm sure someone at DC was like, can you just...
Man-at-Arms is her dad. What the hell is he doing there? This is getting weird.
They're walking down a hallway, and she's stripping out of her formals as they're walking down the hallway.
Oh, okay.
This is... Wow, this is like 10 years late. I swear to God. This is doing all the wrong things that any kind of nostalgia project should be trying to do. It is about trying to death and tits the project up.
Yeah. I mean, literally, she's standing in the hallway in, like, a bra and panties. And then, like, she's...
Did we learn nothing from Thundercats?
Yeah.
No, we didn't.
Then there's, like, explosions and her... I mean, Despera...
attacks.
And
need to start writing them and just say, okay, you know, she's Herdak. Just call her Herdak.
Oh, no, but we don't even have to worry about that, because then we get to the end of the deal, and he turns into He-Man, and then Teela comes up to the top of the castle in her, like, steel bra and panties, because that's her armor.
That's better, yeah.
Yeah. And Despera...
They're barbarians, Katie. It's okay. They're barbarians.
Despera attacks them and takes off her mask, and Teela recognizes her... as Adora. Yeah.
We all knew that already.
Yeah, everybody who didn't know that.
Oh.
Like, they did not try to hide that. That was in the solicit. Like,
I'd forgotten about this. Yeah. I'd completely forgotten about it.
It's absolute shit. This is awful. I mean, this is the best that Giffen could do, and it's really bad. Oh. So please.
So what you're saying is you can't wait for the next issue.
I forgot about that. It's actually by a good writer.
Yeah, I know. It's like, this is the best that Giffen could do with it, you know?
What you're saying is you wish you could have bought 5 copies of this. Is that what you're
totally
saying?
I wish there was... I wish there would have been more on the shelf. Wow.
I have never seen a physical issue of any of the He-Man comics, the miniseries, or this at my comic shop. If I wanted to read the miniseries, I had to get them off Comixology. There was a time when I thought they were digital exclusives, because I've never
had
physical copies of them.
Yeah, it's this was not a good first issue, for sure. I mean, there's so much stuff going on that's just like, this is a continuation of something, and I'm totally lost. So I was hoping for something that would have been a little more first reader friendly. It was not. So,
but the question is, why were you hoping for anything good at all? You were reading He-Man.
I had that Giffen on it, and that Keith Giffen really made me have a little bit of hope for it.
You were thinking
you were blind fool.
I was lulled into a false sense of security.
Someone told you Booster Gold is guest starring in a comic this month and thought it was this
Dover and Eternia this month.
Yeah, I thought it was this book. Apparently it's a different DC book. I saw a DC book and I saw Keith Giffen and I thought Booster Gold, must be it. And so I picked it up.
Super crossed over with He-Man back in the day, right?
Yeah, and I mean, yep. Totally, we'll get that again. Surely.
God. Jesus.
So, anyway.
If it shows up in the second issue, I'll buy it.
On to something that was actually good that I do want to talk about, which is the end of the God Killer, the AVX Aftermath for Iron Man. Now, we had talked about how awful those first few issues
Iron Man. I wouldn't go as far as to say awful.
Not God Killer. I'm talking about pre-God Killer. I'm talking...
No, I know, but I still wouldn't say awful.
They were
I would say awful, just not...
They were kind of
not what we were expecting.
No, they were not what we were expecting from Gillen. Now, welcome. Welcome to the world of Gillen.
Right.
We are totally there. So this issue starts from the last, where it's like, congratulations, you get to fight Deathhead now in your gladiatorial arena. Nice. Which Deathhead is pretty cool in this for the most part, because he's like, no, I'm not going to use my rockets or anything. That would be cheating.
Tony's like, what happened to no enhanced combatants? As nature finds you, remember?
And he like makes this whole argument where it's like he is as he is in nature.
You see me firing buckets or using my flamethrower. I'm not using my upgrades.
See, I think he's
you're a 30-foot robot.
He's kind of a British accent, though, right? You gotta.
I don't know. I've never really felt as if Death's Head has a British.
Really?
He's not. He doesn't. Well, he doesn't talk for Death's Heady in this. He's a little more full sentences in this than I'm used to hearing from
Death's
Head.
Does he still say yes after everything, or have they dropped that?
Oh, hang on.
No, what? He dropped that.
He dropped it?
Hang on, wait. Well, he doesn't do an awful lot in the comic, but he says it twice. He does it twice. Okay. Like, being paid to kill you. Over soon. Yes. And again, after that, he starts talking a little bit more Death's Heady. I'm not being talk philosophy. I'm being paid to kill you over soon. Yes,
oh,
not
God.
Going to you.
Is one piece? Is he's holding like this huge rock? He's like, you're aware of dodgeball? Yes. I hate dodgeball. It'll grow on you.
Awesome.
So then, thankfully, Pepper, which I got confused for a second. I had to remember that Pepper is the new AI in the suit.
I got
confused for a second. So anyway, Pepper piloting the suit comes in and saves the day, which causes the Valkyrie, whatever they're, I can't remember what they're.
Voldy
to freak out. Like, he's guilty, kill him! and so he flies away and fights the little machines, and then the Celestials show up, and you go, what?
Yeah.
I'm like, I literally, turn that page, and I'm still on, like, the previous part, because they're on the second, I'm like, why the fuck are there Celestials there? It's never a good thing. Well, it sort of turns out that, like, this whole thing has been a ruse, right? You go back to the first issue, and I had to go back, because... and that's part of what I did during the break, is I had to go back to, like, this first issue. And you remember that when Tony showed up, like, one of the first things that happened is the little drink carrier thing was talking to him and telling him it was his birthday and that the AI in the suit had told him. Well, that little drink carrier thing is what turns into 451, which is the dude that's been helping him with, you know, like, the breaking out of jail and stuff. And then when he's talking to this Valdi chick later... She's talking about, like, their history and saying that they're protected by this the heart of the Valdi, and that, you know, in their time, the Violet Devourer, the Star Giants, the Unknowable, the Flesh, he with the Flesh of the Galaxies, the Void Falcon, all have shown up and passed them by because they had this cool little thing that made them, you know, sort of become, basically off the radar of big godlike figures. And you go through that now, and it's like, well, now that we know the Void Falcon is the Phoenix, that's like the Violet Devourer. Okay, that's the Galactus, the Star Giants. Okay, that's the Celestials. I have no idea what the Unknowable might be. He with the Flesh of the Galaxies is...
Eternity.
Eternity. I mean, you know, so it's like, okay, wow, that was important stuff that I totally missed earlier. But yeah, so the Celestials have shown up, and she figures out very quickly that the Heart of the Baldi is not around, and has been stolen by 451. So the reveal at the end of this is great, and as the Celestials basically just destroy the Terror, basically just wipe the Baldi out of existence. 451 is talking to Tony, and Tony's like asking what happened, and he gives this great analogy. And I can do it no better justice than to just recount the story, which is, he says, it's hard to explain, Mr. Stark. Try this. Do you ever wonder what a leech would think? Sitting on your skin, drinking your blood, how it would see you. Eventually, it may come to think of you as some kind of great power, a provider, because from the leech's perspective, that's exactly what you are. You are the sun on its little world. That's what the leech would think. But what the parasite thinks really doesn't matter. It's still a parasite. It's just a parasite that the host hasn't noticed. And so that becomes like the analogy here, where like the Baldi have been living off of, you know, celestial and godlike energies for all of this time, and the only thing that's been protecting him has been this Heart of the Baldi, which 451 needs but doesn't explain why. And so he destroyed basically the entire Baldi civilization to get this little thing. And yeah, awesome. Totally played out. Basically, Tony got played because he became the distraction that 451 needed to take this MacGuffin, I guess, for lack of a better term. But so it's going to be interesting. We've got some long game playing out now. It's like, yes, this is what I was missing.
I need to get caught up on it. I haven't read the last two issues.
It's been great.
I definitely need to read this.
It's a great read. And like I said, there's a lot of little subtle things that go on, like I said, that are easy to miss on that first pass. So
you're saying you would rather have Masters of the Universe over this? Is that what you're saying?
Totally. I mean, Teela in a bikini, I mean, come on.
There you go.
You know what's even better, though?
You trade artists?
That, Greg Land is not drawing the next couple of issues.
Yay! Yay! That's so great.
I'll throw that out there.
That is good news. I was hoping for that, actually. It's like a little late Christmas present. Because, man, there's some bad faces in this issue, let me tell you. It's like, there's a face in here that he uses where this girl's like watching her planet be destroyed and she looks happy as hell. It's like,
how many teeth? A lot of teeth?
Lots of teeth.
Lot of teeth.
So much teeth. So much teeth.
Don't you wish you would like do like an issue where like the whole thing took place in like Iron Man's mouth? You know,
it feels that way sometimes. I mean,
like the Psycho Man shows up in his mouth or something, and it's like the microverse or something. And
I'm sure. How many do you think Land had to trace over like previous images of Celestials to do this? Or
that's a question. You do tend to wonder.
It's like, did he just have to go find other images of Celestials? Because, woo, man. Mm. Anyway.
Laugh there. Just before the Celestials show up, that princess appears again, and she's watching Iron Man kick everybody's ass. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, bravo, magnificent, replay it once more. His heroism was almost enough to overcome the horror of his visage. Perhaps with some manner of sharpened implement, one could scour his face of that character.
And oh, the Celestials. Yeah, that was great. Good stuff in this. This is fun. I mean, even just for like the death and horror of all of this issue as well. I mean, it's just like there's a big world, big ideas. Tony, you know, I think the space stuff is obviously going to be around for a bit, other than, you know, of course, he's still trying to save Earth and
stuff. I'm not sure what to make of this origin of Tony Stark setup.
Yeah, that's...
It sounds like it doesn't... It's hard to know if it's going to have anything to do with what's going on or not, or if it's some kind of digression.
Filler or something, or background, I don't know. Interesting. It'll be interesting, but yeah, that is the next issue, and it's out next week, or week after next, I guess, isn't it? It's on the 1st, so...
Yeah.
So, 2 weeks, we'll get that. So, there you go. Iron Man, recommend. Master of the Universe, not so much. Sorry.
What a shock.
Yeah, really. Like, you couldn't have been told that ahead of time. So, all right. Chris McFeely.
Yeah, okay. Time for me to get you all caught up on Age of Ultron.
Yay!
Settle down.
First three issues of Age of Ultron went a little something like, first issue, Hawkeye rescued Spider-Man from the clutches of Hammerhead in the Isle, who were going to sell him to Ultron. In the second issue, everybody sat around and talked about the first issue. And in the third issue, the heroes decided that they would exploit what they learned in the first issue to sell someone to Ultron through a fake fight between She-Hulk and Luke Cage.
The fourth issue, the breakfast table, right? He flipped the breakfast table, is that what he did?
What I remember was issue one, Captain America cries. Issue two, he is all better. Issue three.
Look, that's really what happened in the first three issues of this. In the three issues.
Yeah. Issue three ended where I felt issue one should have ended. God. But we got to issue three, and my reaction, well, I mean, the thing that happens at the end of the issue three is Luke Cage brings She-Hulk in. The idea is, of course, that they're going to, that he's not really handing She-Hulk over. They're trying to get information. But he offers to sell She-Hulk so he can get inside and get some information. And he discovers that it's not Ultron inside the Citadel. It is the Vision.
Oh. And,
yeah, exactly. That was my, I was like, yeah. Oh, okay. Interesting. It's not Ultron at all. What's going on? It's the Vision. Is it something within the Vision? What's happening? I mean, interesting. Then I read the Spider-Man tie-in, which said in no uncertain terms, no, Ultron's just controlling him from afar.
Oh.
Just controlling him from the future.
Yeah, and then we find out in the course of these three issues that Ultron is actually controlling him from the future, which is puts a little bit of more interesting spin on it again.
What?
Ultron is here in the present. Yes, Ultron is striking back. It's revealing how much of Bendis' heroic Age Avengers actually did factor into the plans for Age of Ultron. Because we had the Vision come back at the start of the Return of Norman Osborn storyline in between the Fear Itself and the X crossovers.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out, you know, we get a flashback to it. Even I'm just really going to talk about these next three issues as one thing. You know, this month's worth of Age of Ultron issues.
Okay, because that's what they are, right?
It's one issue. Yeah, exactly.
No, to be fair, the thing starts to pull its finger out and pick up a little piece here. But we do find out that Ultron, like the return of the Vision, even in the course of Bendis' heroic Age Avengers, was about preparations for this, because it is through the revived Vision in the present day that Ultron is striking at the Avengers. The Vision came back at this time so that the Ultron could use him to do this. So it's quite interesting in that regard, you know. The pace definitely picks up. The fourth issue is about as slow as normal, as Luke escapes from the Ultrons for about half of the issue, and then everybody else decides to go to the Savage Land.
Huh?
That's where Bendis ends characters during his crossovers.
Yeah, but the cool thing about that issue that I did like, though, is what he went through to get the information to them. Like, there was like a nuclear explosion, he survived, and then he just dies after he gives them the information. He just survived.
You can rely on Bendis to write a pretty badass hardcore Luke Cage. Yeah, he looked their life just long enough to give them that information about Ultron being in the future. You know,
yeah.
I mean, the entire plot does hinge on a stupid coincidence. Something else we saw in the first three issues was that Black Widow and Moon Knight. Yes, Moon Knight. Because Bendis are operating off on their own somewhere, and they go to one of Nick Fury's secret bases, from the Secret Invasion crossover, and they find some contingency plans of his, and the plans to a bunker where Fury has stockpiled assorted superhuman technologies, including Doctor Doom's time platform. And where is this bunker? Well, it's in the Savage Land.
Yeah. Why not?
Why not? Because so then at the end of issue 4, and also there's been a side plot with Red Hulk and Taskmaster appropriating an Ultron to get the technology for study or whatever. And there was, to be fair, a pretty funny moment. It was, I think it was in issue 3, wasn't it? Where Red Hulk and Taskmaster are watching some Ultrons from afar, and Taskmaster says, "Okay, Steve, here's the plan.
My name's not Steve.
Yeah, I'm not calling you Red Hulk. So here's the plan."
That's pretty cool. Okay. That's pretty cool.
All right, that's funny.
Got
that's...
a legitimate laugh out of that one.
That's a win.
But we get to, you know, we get through these six, and it's like, so like at the end of issue 4, all the heroes have already come to the Savage Land, got this info from Luke, and then by sheer coincidence, and absolutely nothing more, Black Widow and Moon Knight turn up at the same time with the information that's going to help them change everything and save everything, which also just by sheer coincidence happens to be in the Savage Land.
Deus Ex Machina.
I mean, it's one of those, it's like, sometimes if you write things that rely on coincidences well, it won't stick out so badly. I mean, when I was finishing it and I was reflecting back on it, I was like, wait, my first thought was, wait, what was the point of all those separate scenes with Moon Knight and Black Widow? Why couldn't they just have been with the main group of heroes? Certainly the Ultron body that Red Hulk brings with him to the Savage Land is never mentioned again. They do nothing with it. Maybe they will over the course of the next 3 issues, but... So I was like, why couldn't they all have just been one part of one group but come here all at once? And, you know, maybe reduce the first 3 issues to 2, at least, by cutting those pages out.
You don't want to cut. See, you want to expand.
But somebody had to point out to me that, no, they were bringing the information about Fury's secret bunker. And my reaction was, oh, shit, that's right. So everyone else is actually just here by complete coincidence. Everyone else happens to be right where they need to be, where all this is going to kick off. I'm like, dumb. But that's mostly issue 4, actually. Then issue 5 is everybody troops out to the bunker. They meet Nick Fury. He's there. They sort out the teams, and they decide to use the time machine to go forward in time and take out Ultron. Wolverine's having none of it. He decides to go back in time and kill Hank Pym.
Good job.
And pitches along with him. And issue 6 then follows 2 parallel stories of the group of Avengers in the future. Apparently dying, frankly, but it's a technotopia in the future where everything is beautiful, pristine, machine, like, golden, shimmering machine life.
Didn't they watch Back to the Future 2? Like, that was the whole point of Back to the Future 2. If you go into the future, they'll be in the future that Biff has already taken over. You have to go into the past.
JD, you missed the point. Ultron is controlling them from the future.
But in his future, like, that's the future from their current timeline where he's taking
over
the past.
But they don't seem to be... That's it. They don't seem to be attempting... That's the super tarded thing. They don't seem to be trying to undo that. They're just going there to stop Ultron.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like, if you go into... You can't go into the future and stop powerful Biff. You've got to go into the past and stop Biff from getting the book.
Yeah, but they're not trying to undo their present. They're just trying to stop Ultron now, and then they'll come back.
Right, but I'm saying it's like in the second part where it's like he's like, Biff has already taken over the world, right?
Yeah,
so it's easier than to just stop present Biff than to just go back in time and stop him from getting the comic book.
All that matters is that Marty got the matches to burn the book. That's all that matters.
Right.
Did somebody get matches when they traveled through time?
Right. So
you gotta have some matches.
Wolverine has the right idea, right? You can't.
He's advocating killing Hank Pym, so nobody's really on board with that.
Nobody wanted to do that,
but
Wolverine.
This is like arguing that Spider-Man can't kill people. It's like they do this crap all the time.
Yeah, but it's their friend Hank Pym.
Oh,
so nobody's really on board with killing their friend. Certainly at a time when he's still innocent, you know. Long story short, they go back and he does.
He kills Hank Pym?
Yeah.
Sweet!
He kills Pym.
Slices his throat right open.
And it was actually a cool little scene because, like, Sue is with him. And Sue tried to stop him, but then she decided, you know... all those people are dead, and she just let him do it. She,
Wolverine pushes her kid button.
Yeah, she pushes, he pushes
your
the
children
kid.
Are dead, Sue! Several times in the course of the issue, just to make sure she's totally on board.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, and that's where we wind up at the end of issue 6. So definitely the pace and the stakes have picked up significantly, even if the whole thing has, even more obviously than the first three, been pushed off into full alternate reality territory. It's with issue 6 that I would say it's not chronically decompressed. I mean, everything up to issue 5, and Triplett mentioned it in the break, what an amazing coincidence, issue 6 is the one where Brian Hitch is not the artist anymore. Brandon Peterson and Carlos Pacheco are the two new artists, one doing the past scene and one doing the future scene. And funnily enough, as soon as we don't have to put up with giant double-page spreads of jungles and cities in ruin over and over and over and over again, suddenly the pace of the story picks up.
Huh.
Yeah, funny that.
Hmm. Yeah, I didn't know if I would still like the art, because I've never been a huge fan of Brandon Peterson, but, you know, it's not bad. I mean, it works.
No, it worked out quite well. I've never known him very well, but it worked out nicer than the art of his that I saw in that final Avengers arc. Carlos Pacheco has changed his style progressively so many times that he's really not the artist I used to like anymore, but the style he's employing here is a little bit retro, and I enjoyed it. Yes, it's still a nice book to look at, and I don't have to look at double-page spreads of overdrawn rubble over and over and over and over.
Do you want to know how Wolverine inadvertently created the Brood?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you about that. There's a Wolverine in the X-Men tie-in issue, which takes place during Age of Ultron number 6 here, as well, was published this week. Did not read.
Yeah, it's not necessary. It's like right after they pick up Nick Fury's flying car, you know, when they first travel back, and they have to stop because the car like messes up or something, and they sneak into a SHIELD Black Ops, base or something, and while they're there, Logan runs across this creature that's like in a tube, and it's like this little alien that is just, you know, begging to be saved, and like Wolverine's like, yeah, I know butterfly effect, I can't do anything, but dude, I'm an X-Man, I can't, you know, let this dude stay here and suffer, and he like frees it, and it turns out that it's a Brood.
Oh god,
you just didn't recognize it because it looked different, and then it like tried to infect him, like, you know, the Brood always did with the X-Men, you know, back then. In all the stories, Wolverine, you know, fights it off, you know, kills it and gets the thing out of him that infects him. But the queen alien, which is like, you know, just like right next door to him, it updates. You know, it basically adapts to Wolverine's attack, and then like it becomes the Brood that they fought, you know, in the present day, where it has the scales and everything. It basically updates to fighting Wolverine. He's like, oh shit. You know, he realizes what he did, you know, when he looks
Whoopsie.
At it. He's like, oh, hell no, I did not just do that.
God.
And so Sue does something similar, because SHIELD is keeping tabs on all the superheroes, and she realizes they're keeping tabs on Reed, so she actually uses their device and calls him and tells him, Reed, update your security. And he realizes then that SHIELD has been watching him this whole time. And I don't know if there's anything that's going to come out of that. Probably not. It's just a tie-in, but I don't know, it was kind of interesting.
The solicited cover, I think, for number 7 shows us that whenever everybody goes back to the present, that it's not right. You know, we've seen all these weird, twisted versions of characters in this piece of promotional artwork for number 7 that's going to be the cover of the issue. So we know that the present is going to be messed up and put back to normal, and that'll be where Angela comes in. Yay.
All that matters is, like, the cover for the next issue has Wolverine in his brown and orange costume, which I'm totally on board with.
Ooh, cool.
Yeah.
But it also has, like, a Cable Captain America. And, like,
a Cable
Captain America, wow.
Thane has, like, what looks like holes in his chest.
Is he wearing wearing a colander with wires on it on his head?
No.
Captain
America looks like he's Nick Fury also, because it looks like he's got an eye patch.
It's all crazy. Everything you know is wrong. But no, to be, you know, after being very down on the first month of issues, and this month not getting off to much of a better start, that sixth issue has proved quite interesting. It's a fairly well-paced issue that gets that actually tells the, I'm not, it's not a complete story, but it follows like the idea through to its conclusion. They don't hem and haw around it. They don't span three issues getting to, they went to the past and then they killed Hank Pym. You know, it's just boom in that one issue.
Yeah.
And I really, really, really hope the remaining four issues of this series can carry on the momentum. The sixth one picks, it kicks off. The first half is really bad, but hopefully the second half can be where the stuff actually goes on. So we'll see. Definitely one that's going. You know, I said that like there's a difference between the first issue of a miniseries or the first issue of a story arc and the first chapter of a graphic novel. Well, this has been the first five chapters of a graphic novel so far, but hopefully things will change going on from here. I mean, all the issues of Age of Ultron from 1 to 5 have been like 1 and 2 star books at best, but this is the first one to actually be pretty decent.
Now, they have, like, a new one coming out, like, every week, don't they?
Well, they're throwing out 10 issues in a four-month span. It's just, they're just burning through the crossover, basically. Mm-hmm. It was obviously supposed to be a few years ago, when a much bigger deal. And the landscape of the market has changed completely, and they have to approach it a different way, and so they are.
Was this going to be actual issues of Avengers back when he was doing Avengers? Is that what the plan was?
Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, it feels that way, but, yeah. Yeah, it's just a different world, man.
Yep.
What was going to be a huge deal is now like a side project, and
it's kind of like
they had to make
yourself
some money on it.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, that then brings us to the end of the show, where we will talk about Spider-Man because we will. I'll just run through this, I guess. Is that okay?
Sure.
Fine, whatever. There's not a lot. I mean, there's not a lot to it, but there's an interesting bit at the end. So this storyline, this mini arc, I guess you'd say, is this two issues for this?
Yeah, basically.
I'm not confused.
Yeah, it's kind of two because I think like the last issue kind of kicked this cardiac thing off, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Ellis Wortham, who is Elias Wortham,
cardiac.
Right? Yeah, he's cardiac.
Just say cardiac.
Yeah. Cardiac.
Yeah. Cardiac? Yeah, no, you don't.
No, you don't.
I do. Hell yes, I
do. So do I.
Remember Eric Larson drawing Cardiac? I was like, man, he is badass in 1990s.
He's got a fan and a little girl. So
he's like a vigilante, but he's got a secret medical facility.
Cardiac is the kind of supervillain you only know existed because you bought some trading cards in the 90s.
Yeah.
Wow. So Cardiac has like
And I
this...
wouldn't be surprised if he had those, McFeely.
Oh, he did.
Oh, I'm sure young McFeely did. Anyway, and he needed this brain scanning thing that just happened to be something Doc Ock had to save the life of this little girl. And so he went and stole it. This is all last issue stuff. And got into a tussle with Spider-Man. And then Spider-Man was about to be apprehended by the Avengers. And that's where we basically start this out.
And I got to the end of that issue, and the Avengers were all quite reasonably saying, Spider-Man, you know, we need you to submit to X, Y, and Z. And it's all, everybody's taking it all quite calmly.
Yeah,
and then Otto like, was all, no, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. And then, no, you really have. No, you have to make me. And then basically, my reaction at the very end of last week's issue was, oh, hell no, y'all done fucked up now, Otto.
I love how the fight happens, and it's basically all the Avengers attacking him, and it's like, you got, like, Thor, you got Wolverine, you know, you got, like, all these super-powered characters, and then it basically ends with Cap just hits him in the head with the shield. Flames!
He's flames in a page spread. Like,
yeah, there's a couple of things that happen, but, I mean, I love Peter in the background, too. He's like, oh, I know it's Otto, but this is still my face, not the face! Oh! but, yeah, they knock him out.
Well, you know, of course, what we failed to mention from last issue that's important is that Otto started to hear him.
Yeah, Otto's kind of heard him in a few situations, very particular. But so and then there's this full page of Carly talking to Cardiac. It would seem as well.
They don't say who it is. They don't say who it is.
I don't know if it's Cardiac. I wouldn't say it is Cardiac.
I don't think it is.
Wow, sorry.
I think it's somebody else. Yeah,
I saw a doctor. And
there's only three doctors in the Spider-Man world.
I just connected it to the issue, I guess.
Well, what she said, because I didn't turn you in, and two, because you're a good person, and three, so I mean, I don't remember Cardiac being in any of the Dan Slott stuff, so I don't think...
I'm assuming this is the police captain who's the Wraith.
Yeah. Oh. That's a good guess. I was trying to think who it was that she's dealt with before. Yeah, that's.
I, admit, I forgot. I was tying it to him needing the helmet. I was tying it to him needing the helmet and she figuring it was Otto inside and that Otto would help him. I don't know. Anyway, I was wrong. Whatever. Not a biggie. We'll see.
You saw a panel with a black person and you just...
That is just, not... It was, I saw a doctor coat.
What the hell?
I saw a doctor coat.
Where's the doctor? Nobody says anything about a doctor.
I saw the white coat, clothes.
Our doctor's not... What?
Screw you all. Anyway, so
more than one black person can be a doctor, JD.
Yeah, JD.
Did I say anything? Okay. You know what? We'll just.
Hey,
I don't even know if they're supposed to be black. The skin is quite dark in the image, but it could just be because they're in shadow. The police captain isn't black. Yeah.
Anyway, they do a lot of scans on Spider-Man. And I love this part because it's like, all right, well, we've done all these scans and you know, Ox thinking the deal is up. And he's like, well, we've done all this. We've done conclusive testing without a margin of doubt. You are definitely not a Skrull.
I broke down.
That was pretty funny.
Lolled. I was like.
Peter's response was great. What? That's it?
You're not being controlled by that. Space Phantom, a Puppet Master, the Purple Man, or the Controller. It's like, oh, so I'm all good. It's like, yeah, you're great. No problem there, Peter. You're good. Oh, thanks. Meanwhile, Peter inside. Why? But Ock notices the anomaly that no one else does, which I love, like, Ock's response. He was like, how fortunate that, like, the B team would be here on the day that they want to scan me. Like, no one else that would have any clue, you know, I'm the only one.
Damn, no Tony Stark. Yeah. We're okay.
Yeah, so this is great. So Peter's last-ditch effort here is to try to draw a picture for Black Widow and even Black Widow is, like, opening up. She's like, I know you've had a hard time since Silver Sable died. Which, have we gone back to much? It's like, apparently Silver Sable's dead.
Like, she is dead.
We had that whole conversation around the time. Like, she's not really dead. She'll be back. And, like, we never follow it up. And I'm going to keep thinking, Silver Sable's actually dead. That kind of sucks. Order.
That's because we assumed whenever they went back down to show that golden Octobot rising up out of the sea that it had something to do with her not being dead.
Yeah, but since Otto's been back, it's kind of like...
We didn't think that had something to do with the Superior Spider-Man storyline. Yeah. What the hell?
Yeah. Which means Silver Sable's dead. Well, damn it.
Yeah, damn it.
So meanwhile, like...
No one's ever really dead in comics. Come on.
Anyway,
I can't think who the writer is that would go out of their way to bring Silver Sable back.
Oh, God, I just thought of a way to bring her back.
They will. Oh, God. They'll bring her back.
Okay, Silver Sable is in the body of the Rhino. They died together!
Sexy.
There you go!
Oh, man. Okay, so Black Widow's all like, you know, it's okay, you can open up to me, we'll be friends. And Otto's like, yeah, we'll be. Yeah, totally. Peter, meanwhile, he can't write something because he doesn't have control of that part of the brain, but he could draw a picture. So he draws a picture of the worst version of an octopus with an arrow pointing.
I love this line from Black Widow.
Uh-oh, she's like, for someone called Spider-Man, he sure draws a lousy spider. I'm like,
he draws a lousy spider.
Wah, 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 wah.
Yep. So, meanwhile, there's this other great part here where it's like, you know, Ock goes and he's going to rough up Cardiac to get, you know, Otto's equipment back, which he keeps having trouble with tenses and pronouns in this because he's really trying to say that he's trying to get Otto's thing back, but he really keeps trying to say it's his. And meanwhile, then he figures out that they're using it to help this little girl. So not only is he, and not only that, but that the whole reason the girl is having problems is because back during the end of days event, or what was the end of...
Ends of the Earth event.
When he sort of half-fried the planet, he like set off this girl's illness. So it's kind of his fault that she's this sick anyway. So
yeah, it's kind of his fault, asshole.
So he shows how to use. He shows them how to use the scanner and gets the full brain scan that they need. And not only that, but Peter Parker, Doc Ock, Doctor Surgeon, Doctor, actually goes in to perform the surgery.
I love this. When I saw that, I instantly thought, I want an action figure of Surgeon Spider-Man worse than anything in life.
Oh, man.
Does he need to wear the mask?
He's got two masks. That's amazing.
It's just for effect, I'm sure.
I know it totally is.
But it's awesome. And I love this, even the scene after. It's like after the surgery, they're like sitting in the hallway, like drinking coffee and talking about the surgery.
You were brilliant back there. All these years we fought. I never knew under that mask was a man of such skill. God.
And Peter had to kind of let go here. I think Peter was actually kind of trying to control the hand a little bit and kind of finally lets go, you know, because his hand is like shaking.
Yeah.
So to let Ock actually perform the surgery. But then, then things go to hell.
Yeah.
Because Ock, of course, gets his helmet back and performs the scan, of which the girl gives... Oh, and then there's, like, the girl gives him... Gives Peter
Pinky,
the little
Mr. Pinky Penguin.
Oh, and then she gets a little stuffed Spider-Man.
Oh.
Yeah. So Ock's doing this brain scan thing, and Peter's like, oh, man, if he uses that, then, you know, how am I going to find my way back now? And he's like, nope, you won't. Yeah. He can hear Peter now. What's this? You gotta give us the last line, Chris McFeely. I'm sorry, you would do it better than I would.
Which one? The very last one?
The very last one, yep.
All of Peter's memories I kept in his head, taking on a life of their own. Time to put a stop to that. Robot! Last doctor, ready my equipment. I'm going to perform a Parkerectomy.
Yeah.
Oh.
I love the cover to the next issue, too. Did you look at the cover?
Yes.
Yeah, that was kind of creepy.
It's the brain forming the letters. It says the Superior Spider-Man. It looks like Peter's down in the bottom of it and Ock's at the top of it with his arms going...
You know?
That's a Marcos Martin cover.
Totally.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Next issue is supposed to be the issue that's going to piss everybody off worse than 700.
Really?
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Maybe they are.
I'm excited for it.
Hey.
Maybe they do take Peter out, then.
I mean, that's all that could possibly happen, surely. It's too early for Otto to go.
Yeah.
I love this Spider-Man. I love Otto.
I know, and it's like... And
is the Spider-Man No More that you were talking about? You said you saw early solicitations.
Yeah, that's it. Number 9 is supposed to be Superior No More.
Okay. Huh.
I mean, I'm assuming... My guess now at this point is basically that these first 4 months, had Ghost Peter in them... to bring people slowly round to this.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, it's like they didn't go cold turkey. They didn't just cut Peter out completely and go straight Otto. They were like, no, Peter's still there. Look, there he is. And it was like, it's like you thought he was going to come back. But now that we've had 4 months to get acclimated to Otto and to actually really like Otto and realize that there's tons of stuff that really feels like there's yet to come with this version of the character, we can now kick Pete out of the book for a while.
And I was fine with that from the beginning. I mean, I mean, you've heard me say that
there are people less understanding and accepting.
I mean, he doesn't even show up in Avenging, and I'm totally fine with that book. Yeah. You know,
I got a question though. Like, if he performs this surgery and he says that it was his memories that created this anomaly, if he does something where he removes the memories, he doesn't have that to fall back on.
Oh, is he going to
Are people going to figure out then, because he's not going to remember...
Is he going to lose Parker's memories, is what you're
saying?
That's
what I'm saying. Yeah, I mean, maybe he can't have it both ways. Maybe it's either I have total control, or this happens.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And then people will start realizing...
It might not be that he is totally removing that. He might be finding some way to kill the life that these memories have taken. He might not literally be removing the memories from his own head, but again, that would be a great interesting twist on it, because
he would have to be like, what do you do now?
And I like this idea that it's not really Peter, it's just Peter's memories becoming sentient.
I mean, that's what I was wondering, because if Peter's memories get, say, put in another body, does that mean that he won't have any memories up until the point where Ock took over his body?
Yeah, I mean, that would be the implication. Like, he's, you mean saying, like, saying, like, he's not going to remember anything that's currently happening.
Because
yeah,
those aren't Peter Parker's memories. Those are Otto Octavius's memories. But then, these memories are alive, so to speak, and they are aware of what has happened. So are they going to remember this? So, like, it seems a bit wishy-washy and pointless then. If they remember that, that would mean the one blank spot would be everything from when Otto took over to when Peter died and his memories took on a life of their own. There would be just that one blank spot in the middle. Don't remember the exact circumstances that led me to this point, but...
Mm.
Well, he's never, like, left that indication that, like, he's forgotten something, right? I mean, we've never gotten that out of him yet.
The implication from what he has said is that this ghost Peter, the memories, whatever, they are aware of everything that happened, so...
Yeah, and he doesn't know how it happened. He just knows that, hey, somehow I'm still in this fight. Like he said in the first issue.
Yeah, he doesn't know how he's still alive, but he is aware that he died and that took over his body and everything that happened in between. So,
God, I'm looking forward to the next issue. Jeez.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting, you know, what had kind of, wow. I mean, the whole thing is just, like, awesome. This is good stuff.
Good stuff.
Yes.
You know what's also great is whenever Cardiac refuses to give him the brain dealy, and he goes, "Then the die is cast."
Oh man! Yeah,
that is a Spider-Man action figure that's dressed as a surgeon that says, "The die is cast." When you press it on his
just
back,
like a superior Spider-Man figure that you put, like, "The die is cast." Well, but where's now?
You dolts!
No one in this room understands me.
Robot! Oh, this is fun. I'm excited for it. I'm even fine. I mean, Slot can do no wrong at this point. I mean,
Slot we trust.
Yes. I mean, dear God. I mean, Slot is
doing something that sounds bonkers and crazy and like something you wouldn't dare do. I trust Slot's got a plan that's going to make it all work.
And it's, and I mean, it's like, who could do this? Who else could kill Peter, put Ock in his body, and make it this awesome, you know?
I really can't imagine another writer doing this to this level of success.
Yeah.
And it all stems from Dan Slott's love of Spider-Man, and his love for the character, and the fact that he'll never do anything to permanently hurt the character.
No. No, I mean, as long as Peter's body is still around, I mean, I think, you know, there's always a way to undo it, and it will be undone eventually.
Yeah, it's still going to happen where, like, you know, Rock's going to hit him in the head, and it's like, hey, everything's all right now, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, something.
Like, it's like when Ock goes to sleep, Peter Parker wakes up or something like that. They'll body share, and
that'll be the thing.
Well, what would be awesome is, like, he's fighting, like, Thor or something, and then, like, lightning hits him. He's like, oh, hey, I'm back.
Can two arch enemies live together in one body without driving each other crazy?
Oh my god. Do 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 do
do do do do. Oh god, you know, I was just thinking, I just had a crazy thought. Like, so if, you know, if it does happen and Peter does, like, come back full control and Otto doesn't die, you know, Otto goes into something else, what if he goes into the robot? What if he winds up in the robot? Maybe that's why the robot's been sticking.
Could that be why the living brain is here?
It is a living brain.
It's an interesting theory there.
It's like, he'll think Otto's dead. He'll think he'll die, and then there'll be this, like, die is cast.
Is cast.
Maybe Peter will appear to be removed in the next issue. And then, like, in a year's time, it'll turn out he was inside the living brain all along.
Oh, that would be
in the robot. Yeah, somebody's going to be in that robot, I think. I think that's where
Yeah, we've ruined it for ourselves now.
We figured it out.
I'm too smart. I need to not think so much.
Yeah. Thanks, Blit. Thanks, Obama.
Jeez. Yeah. All right. Well, that was great. That was our show.
Sorry, listeners. We ruined it for you, too.
We ruined it. We figured it out. Sorry. So, okay. So, rundown, real quick. Download app, please, dear God. website, go to... it's on the App Store, the Google Play Store. You can download our app. And when I upload the show, you would be able to download it from there. Ideally, I would upload the show.
Yeah, doesn't happen always. But
yeah. So you can also go to the website, fanboyversus.com. Follow us on Twitter, @fanboyvs. We do try to live tweet during the show and do things like that occasionally. And retweet cool news and stuff. I think I retweeted the Eisner's nominations this week. But so those are things that you can get. Yeah. Follow us live. Listen to us live every Sunday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Well, most Sundays, 9 p.m. GMT. And that is at tfradio.net/live. That's where you can find that. So if you do have questions or comments or ideas or thoughts or whatever you'd want to send to us, or tell us you hate us, tell us you want to punch us in the face, whatever you want to tell us.
He hates me too, don't worry.
Yeah, not a problem. Everybody hates me. So you can send that into, I believe it's contact@tfradio.net. But there's email then on the website as well, which is another good reason to go there. Or just tweet it to us. That's always fun as well. So, anything else? Big week next week, apparently.
Yeah, I got like over a dozen things.
I've got like 15.
What comes out next week? I haven't even looked at it.
Avengers, New Avengers, Avengers Arena. It's a hell of a lot of Hickman for anyone, man. East of West number 2 is out. The second printing of East of West. The second printing of East of West. S number 1 is out, so if you didn't check that out digitally and you couldn't find a copy, that'll be out. Get that. Manhattan Project, East to West, Avengers, New Avengers, all out next week.
That's a Hickman overdose. That's Hickman. Like, that could kill a man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody might find me, dead in the floor somewhere.
A lesser person would faint.
You get them 4 Hickmans. There's Avengers Arena, Fantastic Four, and FF are both out. Transformers More Than Meets the Eye, Ultimate Spider-Man is out. Yeah, Young Avengers is out next week too. There's more stuff than these number of fingers that I've been putting on, but yeah.
So lots, basically.
Stuff. If you've been following Morning Glories from Image, the new trade of that is finally out, as well as the next issue, so you can go straight into that if you want to. That's all I can think of, but there is more.
Wow.
Big week.
Big week. So, as I said, I will not be here next week. My sister is getting married, so...
Congratulations.
To my sister, Liz, and Matt. So I'll be in Western Maryland. So if you're in the area, I'll be busy.
Leave me alone!
I'll be extremely busy. No, it's cool. I'm not like doing... They're very small wedding party, so I'm not even... I don't even have to do anything. I can just show up. So it's not like I have to be in a wedding party or anything. I mean, it's okay, because, like, my sister was, like, my best man. She didn't have to, like, do that for me, you know? It's not like I would have to be, you know, that for her in her wedding, or even be in her wedding party. It's totally cool. No, I'm kidding. Anyway, but no, I'm really excited for my sister, so, yay. What? I had my sister as my best man in my wedding, because my sister's awesome. I love her. So, anyway, yes.
Does that mean you get to be the maid of honor?
That's what I was saying. But I didn't get. That's what I was saying. I didn't get to be the maid of honor.
I was waiting for McFeely to say it. I was just leaving it wide open, but nobody said it. I was faking it. But.
I didn't. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I didn't even get to be a bridesmaid. So.
I think you would look great in taffeta.
Don't you think?
Oh yeah, and bows.
I think what I would have liked to have done is like to do like a turquoise tuxedo, or maybe powder blue, something.
Yeah. Sexy.
That would be awesome. So I'm not doing any of those things. It's a very informal wedding, so I think I'm wearing a polo. my sister and her fiance are really cool people, really laid back. So I'm really excited. I'm really happy for them. So that's where I'll be. You all should be here. We should be still doing a show. That's the plan. If it doesn't, we'll of course let you all know. So, anyway, that's it. That's the show. Thank you so much for tuning in, and please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus.
This has been Fanboy versus. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.